This is the Walk Magazine Podcast, Episode 10.
Walk with me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
Hi, my name is Cindy Lehman. I'm the former editor and publisher of Walk Magazine and the host of the Walk Podcast. Earlier this year, the Columbus Marathon announced it would shorten the length of time the course was open from 7 hours to 6 hours. It's a new trend many marathons are following, upsetting many walkers who need more than 6 hours to finish. I was associated with the Columbus Marathon when it initially made the race 7 hours long. The growth in the number of walkers and run walkers entering marathons was the main reason races were moving in that direction. In fact, some races were even open 8 hours. Before getting upset about the marathon's decision to go back to 6 hours, I decided to talk to race director Darris Blackford directly. And while I had him in front of my microphone, I had to ask him about the situation with the late delivery of race medals in 2014. Some of you may know that the medals arrived on race day after the race had already started. The issue with the medals and other challenges with the 2014 race so weighed on Darris, it ended up being what we talked about first. These two issues are being faced by many other races. As many of you may know, medals not arriving for the race has happened to several other events too. And many races that go through neighborhoods are also being forced to shorten the length of time they are open. So though this is a discussion of how Columbus has dealt with these problems, I'm sure other race directors have had to come up with similar solutions. The before the microphone was on conversation was so interesting. This episode begins without a proper introduction of Darris. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Walk with me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk.
You know, I went into race weekend with, it was Wednesday when the problems started. We had 10 things that went terribly wrong all at once. Starting on Wednesday with the calls to cancel the race because of the Ebola crisis.
Oh.
Yeah, because Ebola was such a problem here in Ohio. But apparently it was the time when that one nurse from Texas had traveled to Cleveland.
Okay.
All of a sudden, people are like, well, you know, you need to cancel the race because you have people coming from Cleveland and Akron to your race. I'm like, yeah? Like, well, that woman with Ebola was there. Well, we had people coming from Texas, and we weren't going to cancel, we weren't going to close the southern border. I mean, like, so that was number one. And it was just all weekend long, there were things. On Thursday or Friday of race weekend, I had to go back out to Grandview and re-flyer the neighborhood because the old mayor, it went through her neighborhood, the course did. We had to make a last-minute change through the neighborhood, and she was upset, claimed we didn't do flyers, although the volunteers had just completely swore up and down that they did. They did all the door hangers. I know we put signs up because I put them up personally. So we had that issue. She's upset with us. And then the new mayor, or the current mayor, is dealing with her, the old mayor. And it's like, why am I? This is race weekend, and I'm out here traipsing around. And you know, but the whole time over my shoulder, the medals. The medals had been going on for months. It's just like, This isn't a surprise. We're just dealing with it, which is interesting because that problem is still happening with the ports out in Long Beach and L.A. I got a call in mid-January on a Thursday night. It was after a board meeting, which is downtown, and I'm driving home, and it's a phone call from California. It's the one of the top race officials from a company that puts on a lot of races around the country, and they're putting on a race in Arizona. And he starts by saying, hey, I saw that message you sent out after your medals and how you dealt with it. That was really just a great job. I said, well, thank you. He said, well, I've got the same problem, and my race is in 2 days. What should we do?
Yeah. Well, to recap for people who might not know, the race medals arrived after the race started.
Yeah, so we knew all weekend long that this is kind of, up until Friday, 4:59, we were probably not going to have the medals. 5 o'clock, I should say, I'm sorry, 8 o'clock, because 5 o'clock West Coast time.
Right.
We have a guy, the company we're working with, who has a guy who's trying to get these things out of customs, out of the port of Long Beach. He's been working for days upon days and weeks to get this to happen. And finally they release them in California at 5 p.m. Pacific time. The race is on Sunday. Well, by this time I'd given up. We're not having our medals. We have decided, we've prepared a message that we're going to hand out at the finish line on flyers. We've prepared signs that people are going to see as they finish that say, "We're so sorry this happened." My team basically goes around my back, which was great, and starts working with this guy, and they coordinate a drive across the country. And he basically drives all night, all the way across the country. And they tell me Saturday evening, once they had gotten, I don't know, Oklahoma or somewhere crazy, they finally let me know that this was going to happen. I start crying. I'm just a mess, because I've been a mess anyway. These things, it wears me out emotionally so much, regardless.
It's still 18 hours away.
And it's like, oh, yeah, but so they're tracking them down. So, yeah, they arrived. They got them here. I mean, this thing, it's a van, and there are these boxes. I think each box probably weighs 100 pounds, let's say. There's 100 in a box, so it's 180 boxes times 100, whatever they are. It's not equipped to carry this kind of weight. They're on the phone with them constantly. He and his brother or partner or somebody are staying awake all night to drive across the country. They didn't take into consideration the time zone, so they did lose a little bit of time. We thought they were going to be here at 6 a.m., but they didn't arrive until probably about race starts at 7:30. They arrived around 9:30 in the morning.
Okay.
But they pull up. We had to alert the bomb squad that this unmarked van will be coming at a high rate of speed towards our finish line. They flag them down. The bomb-sniffing dogs jump in the back, make sure there's no bombs in there. They let them through. They unload these things. They're using wheelchairs and golf carts, anything they can to get them to the finish. We missed about 2,000 people that had come across. It was approximately almost 2 hours into the race, into the half marathon finishers. So full marathoners hadn't finished yet. What was nice about it is we missed a couple thousand initially, but because the way the setup is, it was a nice day, a lot of people hadn't left, so we were able to make announcements and let people know that we still caught them in the Celebration Village area, at least to get them the medal. And it wasn't ideal, because some of them, we were trying to catch up, some were still in the plastic wrappings, but we didn't have to miss most people. So we ended up having about 1,000 people that we had to send them to. And
that's not bad.
Considering it was 16 plus thousand that finished, no marathoners were affected. They didn't even know it happened. And the half, again, the bulk of the people still hadn't finished. So, ideally I never would have wanted it to happen. But we got blasted, obviously, on Facebook and social media and all that. And I take this thing to heart. And I don't just do that because I'm supposed to. It was my very first... I don't think I had done a half marathon before I did the Columbus Marathon in 1991. I think I'd done a 10K, and then I trained to do a marathon. And back then, it wasn't the same thing. You didn't really have a lot of options to do a half marathon one weekend and then a marathon the next weekend. But I really take this personally, because I love this event, and I felt terrible. And so I came out with that blog that basically just was honest and explained what had happened. The outcry, or the positive response was unbelievable. People were so forgiving because we were just honest, which is sort of sad. Now that honesty is like a good thing, when did that change? When wasn't it always that way? But once we got like 30,000 reads or something crazy, we knew that we had done the right thing. And I felt a few people said, "Oh, you should have told us beforehand." I really didn't know beforehand. I thought we were going to have them. And up until they calculated around 6 or 7 in the morning about the time zones, because he hadn't reached the time zone that we were affected by yet. But, you know, it all ended at the end of the day. But it was one of those things. It just haunted me all weekend. Everything that we did, it was over my shoulder.
Right.
At our reception where we welcome the kids and all that.
Right. I was there.
And I knew it was in the back of my mind, you know. And we're setting up stuff race morning. And it's in the back of my mind. Everything's in the back of my mind. And it really tainted it. But it was only one of many things. And I tell people, you don't know what's going to go wrong. You have to prepare everything to go right, knowing that things are going to go wrong, whether it's Ebola, scare that people are threatening to boycott the race or telling us to cancel it, or political issues that are challenging us with course issues. There were some other crazy things that were going on. The medals themselves. It was just one thing after another. And it's just, but anyway, at the end of the day, it all worked out great.
But considering how many years you've done the marathon, or you've been the race director, yeah. This is really the first time you've had a snowball like this, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was a big enough one that it was enough. It was, every year I quit on Sunday around 1 o'clock. This one I think I stayed quit. I stayed done until around 7 or 8 p.m. Usually I revive right away because of the stuff. But yeah, I guess I take it personal, which is not a good thing. There's 18,000 emotions, 18,000 people. Nobody. I was talking to someone about this the other day, and if we were putting on a really great dinner party for 18 people, we could really do it great. But when you have 18,000 people, you just have to raise the bar as high as you can while trying to do the best you can. And you just, you're right. It was the first time that things had really gotten crazy, but it was a lot at once. We're going to be okay.
Yeah, we should be fine. I actually talked to some event planners I know. After the medal issue and asked what they would have done if they would have let people know in advance or not, knowing that the medals were that close. And they said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
She said, or the main person said, why would you upset everyone in the entire race when it might only affect a few thousand people? And this way, 2,000 people are upset, and you can make it right with them, but the rest of the people aren't upset. So,
right. You know, the other thing, the example I was telling you about from Arizona, they let people know the day before, and their message was, we're really excited to see you. We do want to be very upfront with you and tell you we do have an issue with our medals. They had a posting, a link to the port situation, which is there's union issues and things like that. Their issue was they let people know because they were, I think, in an even more dire situation. I don't know if they had the same hope that they were going to possibly arrive. You know, looking back, I mean, would I have done it differently? I think we handled it the best we could have given what we knew.
Right.
You know, but.
Okay. And the majority of people I know who found out that there was an issue after the fact felt the same way.
Yeah.
But we were kind of surprised when we received our medals in plastic bags.
Yeah.
Well, that's different.
Yeah, and again, I don't feel bad for me. I know I work as hard as I can. At the end of the day, I can always hold my head up. I felt bad for our team, for our volunteers. It was just, that's not what I want to put other people through. And that's when you take it personal, because they're out there just doing their best, and they don't need to be dealing with
right.
the negativity. And that's why it was important to me, maybe because at heart I'm a communicative person and writing is important to me, and I had to say something. And so that's where it all came from.
I thought it was a good response.
Yeah.
And what are you doing to prevent that from happening this year?
So I actually was just at a conference this past weekend, and I have met with probably four or five different metal companies. I have looked at American Made. I have looked at different sources of things. One of the challenges we had is we had a third party that we were working for. We didn't go direct to manufacturer, which is one thing we will do. I've looked at the American Made. The problem is the pricing is so much higher, and the quality, unfortunately, is not really great. Because we don't have a lot of vendors making them here, we don't have the same technological opportunities to really do some neat things.
Mm-hmm.
So you get kind of basic look, basic color, and I'll be honest, the glitz and the glamour of these things now are what people are doing them for. You can't just get away with the old 50-cent piece size plain colored item on a plain colored ribbon. You've got to go all out, and to do that, it needs to come from needs to be sourced elsewhere. So, but we're looking. I've even looked at thinking of a new career of figuring out how can you make them in this country. Maybe that's the next direction I need to take. And, there's no one else, you know? But there again, maybe there's a reason why there's no one else.
Yeah, there might be. Okay, well, the other thing that I think we've pretty much wrapped up about the medals. They are great medals, by the way, and they were worth the wait.
Thank you.
The other thing that is happening this year that is going to be a big change is the marathon is going to be an hour shorter. Mm-hmm. You're going from a 7-hour open to a 6-hour open. And why are you doing that?
Oh, you heard about that. So, the decision to make a change to the full marathon distance was not made lightly. This is something that I've been researching for actually more than just 1 year. I've been looking at this for a couple of years. I've been studying our finisher rates, studying the complaints that we get, and the timing of everything. And the biggest challenge that we face has nothing to do with our athletes. We are losing, and I'm not just saying we as in the Columbus Marathon and Half Marathon, but events like this are really losing favor in the community. We get complaints that come in to us that also go in to City Council and to the mayor of Columbus, of Upper Arlington, of Grandview, of Bexley. And all of a sudden, these issues and these complaints, this negativity that we're facing starts to build up. You know, I mean, I had actually threats from someone who, it was an untraceable email, but it was, go F yourself, and I'm saying F without saying the whole word, go F yourself at yahoo.com, sent me emails threatening me because of us keeping his streets closed for, you know, inordinate amount of time. And I've had letters from people. We've got them for years from different people, but the numbers are increasing.
Okay.
And we're starting to see even the communities we're working with. It's harder and harder. I go to city councils. I go meet with the mayors. The negativity of what's going on with closing these streets is just a challenge. We are very fortunate that we partnered with the hospital, with Nationwide Children's
Right.
Hospital. I will tell you that there's going to be a tide that's going to change the face of a lot of these larger scale events in this city and other cities because of this citizen, I don't want to call it unrest, but citizen disappointment in us. And we really don't have a leg to stand on, no pun intended, but we do close their streets. We interfere with them. Bexley's not a problem because Bexley's asleep. Our last person is out of Bexley by 9 a.m. Bexley doesn't even know we've been there half the time. But the problem is we get into Ohio State, which is on a Sunday. We're really not affecting too much.
Right.
But once we pass the stadium, once we get onto the west side and head over to Upper Arlington, we've actually been affecting Upper Arlington since 9 a.m. because our wheelchairs have already come through
right.
early. And then we start to get our first runners, and then our mid-pack, and then our walkers come through. Then we have Grandview, same thing. And it just became so much negativity that we're seeing, and we're going to start seeing more of it. We are seeing more of it. It's just that the trend is going up, and it's just not fair to the event. It's not fair to the volunteers that are out on the street that are trying to, the course marshals and those folks mm-hmm. that are just trying to do their job. We also still have to close up. We still have to clean up. So when we finished, so when the course closed maybe at 2 o'clock in Grandview, that we still had to pack up our stuff. We still have a street sweeper that comes through. So all these things are just causing delays in these communities, and we can't afford to deal with the negativity that ends the race for all.
Right.
Because of the pressure that these few squeaky wheels, unfortunately, that have got the ear of the city council or the mayor or whatever, because they're the voting constituents in those communities. It's a terrible situation, and I hate to do this. I mean, keeping the half open the same amount of time is relatively easy because, A, it's the same start-finish line, but also that's worst-case scenario is if our last person crosses the start line at 8 a.m., worst-case scenario is 11:30 in the morning. That's not a problem. That's not where the problem lies. The problem lies out in the areas that we are coming through toward the end of the day. 2003, 2004, I forget what year it was, the marathon started the walkers an hour early.
Right.
Great idea in theory. Problem is, the race starts at 7:30. Now we start them at 6:30. It's already dark when we start. Well, now we're putting people on there on unsecure streets because we don't have the police available for that extra
right.
hour to shut things down. It's kind of a dance that they have to do. And it'd be great to put people out there, but now we get into the issue of it's unsafe for them because either they have to be on the sidewalk or if they're in the street, someone's not going to see them. It's just becomes the greater good is to keep people safe. That's the number one rule we have with the event, no matter what. So there's no way to win. We're just trying to maintain some level of consistency to keep the event going without the growing backlash that we're facing.
So how many people do you think this is actually going to affect?
190.
190, that's it?
That was the number of people that finished after the six-hour mark in previous years. It's actually been even scaling down. I've been looking at this for years.
That floors me.
Yeah.
I cannot believe it's not a higher number.
Yeah.
With the number
yeah.
of, with so many more walkers entering events,
yeah.
I can't believe it's only affecting 190 people.
But?
Out of 19,000.
Well, but take the half out of it.
Okay, well then.
So, and we sign up the marathon at 7,000. We close it at 7. We get somewhere between, it's hard to say, probably 6,000 show up.
Okay.
5,800. We had 5,500 finishers last year.
Okay.
So 190, just round it up to 200. 200 to 55, that's obviously a higher percentage.
Right.
But still, it's all in the marathon. It's not the half marathon. So
right.
half marathon's completely unaffected. And I really looked at the timing. I based it upon our competitive walker group. Of all the competitive walkers that we had, I think we had, I forget the number of people that sign up to be a competitive walker, but it was only one or two people would not have made it
okay.
out of the whole competitive walker division. That doesn't mean that if you're not a competitive walker, you can't do it, because we had a lot of people that don't even care about that
right.
that finished ahead of the last competitive walker. So,
right.
you know, it is. I hate to be the bearer of bad news for anyone. I don't want anyone to not be able to take a part in this. And, you know, we get complaints of people, well, you know, Disney keeps theirs open. Well, Disney owns their property. You know, it's a lot different. Places like Chicago, which has 40-something thousand people, they even have to close theirs at 6.5 hours. Twin Cities is 6 hours. A lot of our contemporaries that we really try to study and try to raise the bar to be equal to some of these. I have a whole list of them. I think Houston is one of them, and there's a number of other ones that we really try to mirror ourselves after. They're all in that 6 hour range. And yeah, if anything, I guess the disappointment is that when they made the decision back in 2002 to go to 7 hours, I know it was to be inclusive,
mm-hmm.
but it also does kind of sets you up for the day when maybe something's going to change. And it's not because of it's because we want to remain in a dynamic metropolitan area. Columbus is growing. We can't get away from that. Just before we sat down, I didn't have a chance. I was going to run some census numbers, but I would tell you, just since 2002, the number of cars on the road in this city has probably gone up. How much percent? The number of houses and neighborhoods and retail areas. I mean, things that didn't exist any before 10 years ago, whether it's malls or shopping areas or housing developments. It's just to continue to remain a thriving, successful event, we had to do something, because we're going to, I fear what's going to happen for events in communities like this that are growing long term. If they don't have a charitable component, that is going to really be a death knell for them. But even if they do have a charity, they're going to have to make changes. I believe that this event would not exist in 5 to 10 years if we didn't start to comply and play the game for those other communities. Because not everybody likes us. We're like politicians. It's like 49-51%, We're the 51%. 49 don't like us.
But at least now, unlike in previous years, the marathon gets enough publicity in advance that people know it's coming.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Most people, unless you're living right on the route, most people can plan their day around it if they pay attention to what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
Unlike in 2002, where half the people I talked to didn't even know there was a marathon in Columbus.
Yeah.
So when
yeah.
they hit the traffic problems, they were surprised.
Yeah. Well, and then the thing is, you think, though, that the publicity does a lot of good. And it does a lot of good when people want to believe it, but when they're upset about it, they then turn around and say, oh, I never heard this. I haven't seen one thing about this. You know, and the complaints are so just first world problems. Yeah. I can't get to brunch. I can't believe it. Like, really? I mean, does that really? But it's just that the outcry is just growing, and we're also... The danger is, I start to get a sense of these communities themselves are not that happy with it. You know, we've had to make changes. We have made changes in Upper Arlington specifically because of the backlash over the last few years. If you look at the course this year and last year, which will be the same in Arlington as 5 years ago, it's down to about a mile is all we go through Arlington. It used to go through, and back in the early days, it went through... Kenny Road, to Fishinger, mm-hmm. to North Star, to Mount Holyoke, to all those streets. It was several miles that went through Arlington.
And when the race went the opposite direction, we did that first.
Yeah, yeah. And it's 6-1, yeah. It does the other, and it'd be great. But then it's just other issues that develop then in Bexley. I mean, we do have cooperation within the communities. We have great support in places, particularly Grandview, which would be terrible if we didn't have their support, given the fact that we are there dead last except for the neighborhoods of Columbus. So, you know, mile 23, that's in Grandview. That's about as late as you can get. But they're pretty cooperative. But already this year, I'm already having meetings about our course. We have to change our course in Grandview this year again, because I reached out to them 2 weeks ago, and they're telling me that there's going to be construction on First Avenue and Northwest Boulevard.
Oh, no.
and some other areas. So they can't even tell me if it's going to be done or what's how far we're going to be. So I'm already looking, you know, we're looking at finding some ways around it already. And it's because we unfortunately fall at the tail end of the season of construction. It's like farming. They only have a certain time they can do things. So, but yeah, it pains me, and I do take it very seriously in terms of I don't like to upset people, and we've worked through this. On the other side of it, though, I realize people, every second counts. We work hard to get everybody across the line early. I've been telling people that the last person would be estimated around 8 a.m., but we're going to get them some time. We're going to get them across at 7:50 or 7:45 or somewhere in that range. So now instead of 6 hours, now at least we got it to 6:15 or 6:10. And the other thing is, if it gets to be, I have reports constantly of where people are at. So I know from the Red Cross, from the police, from spotters out on the course, we know where our last people are at. Our timing mat at mile 20 tells us exactly. When that last person crosses, I go to my timer and I say, John, what's it looking like for the last person? He can tell me within 2 or 3 minutes the estimate of when they're going to finish. So if someone's out there and it looks like they're going to be around a 6:05 or 6:10, we're not going to penalize them. Because I can tell you right now, there are people who've complained. I wish they were listening. Because they've complained, and I've let them have 7.5 hours before, and I've been the person to give them their medal. Now, granted, it wasn't the hoopla at the finish, because they finished. But we left the clock up. The last thing we do is take the clock down. I don't want anybody to take advantage of that, but we also aren't going to be tyrannical and be so, you know, punish somebody. And I want people to have a great time. But I also want them to prepare. It means you can't take advantage of it.
Right. But unlike before, when courses would say they're open 7 hours and you finish in 6.5 and the finish line is already torn down.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's bad.
It is. But I have to tell you, there's also times where it also plays against us. I had a person this past year who I found, I was moving some barricades, and he's coming down Neal Avenue, completely off course. And he has his number on, and he's clearly not he has Wear a Marathon number, but he's clearly off course. And I said, hey, you know, what's going on? I'm Darris, the race director. How can I help you? Are you doing okay? He says, yeah, I just had to cut the course. I was way behind. I said, well, where were you? He said, well, I was at about a 17-18 minute pace when I went through 13 miles, and I knew I was behind, but I figured I'd just keep going. Well, he knew he was behind. He was 2 minutes off the pace at mile 13, yeah. And he knew it, and he decided to keep going. How can I be held accountable for that? But yet, you know... I understand his heart feeling, his heartbreak.
Right.
But you also have to be somewhat fair.
And that's one of the biggest things I've been trying to get across to walkers is if the race says a 16-minute mile and you're walking an 18-minute mile, don't enter the race. I mean, if you're close, give it a try. But if you're not even close, don't do that to the race. That's why so many races don't want walkers in their events.
Yeah.
They're not worried about the people walking a 13, 14-minute mile.
Right.
It's the 18, 20-minute mile.
And when you know halfway that you're already behind and you're going to decide to keep going anyway, that's not fair to anybody, including yourself, because medical personnel, they only have the EMS and fire, they only have a window of time. They can't be out there an extra 30 to 45 minutes just because you thought you'd keep going. That's just, and then it becomes a safety issue to you as a participant.
Right.
And so on and so forth. But no, it's... You know, I'm pained. I hate this. I don't want to have any negativity toward the event, toward certainly the hospital and anybody that's involved in it.
Do you think that part of this backlash is because there are so many more events, so many races being held in Columbus right now?
Absolutely. And it's going to get worse. I talked to... we have a very good relationship with the police department, the special events department, and the Rec and Park department. I think there was 128 events last year.
Jeez.
There's already over 140 or 150 that are planned.
Oh, my. In Columbus, not talking about Dublin. No,
this is just Columbus that go through permits, the permit office with Columbus.
Oh, wow.
It's great. What a great city to live in. It's terrible. What a terrible city to live in. be careful what you wish for situation here. It's so great with a dynamic place, but now everybody is getting excited. Everybody, and it's not just the locals that have been here for years, but there's a lot of money in this industry. And that means there's a lot of for-profit businesses that'll travel around, set their tent up, because that's a big million person market. We're going to catch some of those people. It's the proliferation of the confetti run, the asparagus run, whatever run you want to have. They're all exciting and they're great, but we have a big bullseye on us because this is a very strong market with a lot of people, strong running and walking community, health and wellness, big university plus 7 other universities.
Mm-hmm.
So great draw, but that also means everybody's coming to town. The circus is coming to set up and that's... there's already a moratorium that the city, Rec and Parks, and the city events department put up to new events can only go in certain areas. So if you came to town and wanted to put on a 5K, you get a map and they tell you where you can go. You can't just choose your area. A lot of them are being directed to the bike paths, things like that, which is great. But even so, the numbers are still up. And that's still every single event affects somebody who's going to be, someone's going to be upset. Not mm-hmm. everybody's going to be happy. And as that continues, the more people that are upset, the backlash just grows. And it's not just these running and walking events now. It's just, we have big festivals.
Right.
We have, I remember when I moved here back in 91, I think Red, White, and Boom was one of the only big deals in town. Now, every single weekend in summer, spring, summer, and fall, there's something big going on. And then you throw in football. and you throw in the Quarter Horse Congress, the entire month of October, all these things together makes it for a very dynamic place, but it's also a crazy place when you try to drive.
But when you think, if you could have races every single weekend, the number that have permits, that's 3 a weekend, but you can't run them every single weekend. we were doing one race, I don't even remember which one it was, downtown, and it was going on the bike trail. And we could see glow sticks sitting on the ground. And someone said, oh, yeah, the glow race was last night. And there was some other one that had been the morning before. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, how do people who live down here handle this?
There you go. And
people by McPherson Park.
Yeah. And luckily this event has some legs to it. No pun intended.
Yeah.
But... it's just you hate to be in that position where people don't respect it. And, there was a guy, I don't know how credible it was, but the Cap City Half Marathon There was a guy who was upset, who was threatening to block the course mid-race with a vehicle. It was something about he was moving or had a moving truck, and he was upset. It was over on third, I think, and police had to intervene with him. And that's safety and things that you get into that, you know, you don't want someone driving over someone, or, you know, road rage is not artificial. It's real.
Right.
And people just lose their minds, and we don't want to have that situation. We already get the horns honking and everything else when people are upset, which is funny, is they're usually on their way to church,
right,
which is really ironic. But that's we'll leave that to another discussion.
But it is fun, though, that the one parish, the priest comes out after Mass and high-fives everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
The last year I was too fast and I didn't see him.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, but again, you have to strike a balance.
Yeah.
We have too many masters. We have to keep a lot of people happy. But it's one of those things. It was not done in a rash decision. It was not done without talking to a lot of people and just figuring out what can we do to be as fair, but also to continue to provide an opportunity. That's where keeping the half marathon, the length of time with that, adding spots in that, hopefully allows people to still participate. And, you know, we can't be everything to everybody, but
right,
we want to be as much as we can to as many as we can.
Okay, now that you're adding the extra 1,000 people to the half, are you going to increase the number of corrals?
Yes.
And oh, good.
Yeah. So we're actually coming up with a staging idea. We actually are the way the corrals will be set up, as opposed to just locking people into literally a corral. We're looking at creating like a village, and it would be basically Village A, B, C, and D. And people can actually go, and they can, instead of tripping over fencing and things like that, they can actually go to the restrooms and things like that, and then almost have a call-up, and they'll be called into the
okay,
starting area. But, you know, New York does this, and other places do this. They actually have these villages, and it just makes it much more user-friendly.
Because last year felt really, really tight,
yeah,
and was a little bit nervous with
yeah,
how crammed we all were in there.
So what we did, it happened that news helicopters were flying overhead, and there was photos taken of our start line. We have looked at those, and we didn't know what we didn't know. If you and I walked down there right now, you would say, wow, there is so much room down here. Well, then once you get all those people and all the stuff in there, it's like, wow, this got really tight. But what we did from those aerial photos is we can see large areas that we didn't even use. There's large streets, and Spring Street to the west is completely wide open. And other areas that we just, it's like, wow, why didn't we think of that? Because at the time, you just think you've got all the room in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really going to be, it's been very helpful to be able to study what we know now, because we've never been there before, and we're definitely focused on making it much less congested. We're also going to time it out more to not only have the corrals longer and have more of them, but also time it out to where we can clear it a little bit easier and then give people the opportunity to kind of get going. We talked about doing, we're still looking at the idea of a competitive walker start, a corral for competitive walkers. Maybe that would even be something that we would do. Time it out, and maybe put that between A and maybe have A and B, and then between C and D have competitive walkers, which is around a 2:30, 2 hour to 2:30 range. Just start them, kind of like the elites start up ahead of everybody. We'll actually have it as a separate start corral. It may only be several hundred, but at least we'll give those people who really cared about their time to go ahead and be in that area, and then do the other corrals after that. But either way, we're studying all that to make sure we you know, I've heard the issues. I've seen the number of complaints. We do a survey after the race, and we have just a crazy response rate. I mean, usually, like, if you get, like, a survey, it's like, you know, what do they say, 4% survey results are, like, phenomenal. We get, like, 35% response.
Oh, my gosh.
Rate. We had over 10,000 additional comments. We ask people, is there any additional comments you'd like to make to all these different questions? So I'm still going through them. It's crazy. But, you know, I could have not read any of them, and I knew exactly what the issues were. I knew Gear Chick was a disaster. I was in the middle of it. It was like the movie Titanic. Did you ever see the movie Titanic? Mm. When the boat sank and they're all bobbing in the water? That was our Gear Chick. My volunteers and I and my team were in there swimming among these bags. We didn't have enough room. It was terrible.
Was it just the room issue?
Yeah, we just didn't have enough. Again, when we mapped it out, oh, this looks like plenty of room. Let's put some signs up. Oh, it's just... So we're totally restructuring that. We're going to a large tent system with racks and things like that. It's going to be very well organized. I've studied, I've been traveling around some different races and borrowed some ideas from the Dallas Marathon, from Disney World Marathon. It's going to be much more user-friendly. The heaters, we had heaters. Great idea, but a lot of them weren't working.
And a lot of them you couldn't get to because you were... trapped in your corral.
Exactly. That's where that issue comes up. So we're going to basically have more heaters, easier access, and making sure they're all working. Make sure we're going to fire them up, make sure they all light, and go from there. The goodie bag. Goodie bag was not a goodie bag. The goodie bag was a bag that we used for Gear Check that had a couple goodies in it and a lot of flyers. We force anybody that wants to do handouts in our goodie bag to... our participants. It has to have a value added. It has to be a discount or a value towards something.
Okay.
Doesn't matter because it's still a piece of paper in some people's eyes. If they don't live here and they've got a 25% off for the Ultra Fit 5K whatever run, Rib Fest run, and it's Earth Turkey Trot, doesn't matter because they don't live here. Mm-hmm. So we're really working, actually even had some discussions on just going full on, figuring out a way to make it like a Halloween type of theme. And actually at the expo, people can go around like trick-or-treat. It's around trick-or-treat time, so we're going to kind of have some fun with that. Finish line food. You know, it's tough. Half the people love it, half the people hate it. So we're always trying to tweak that, trying to do better, and we actually budgeted this year, the board budgeted additional funds that will go towards food. Normally we get the food provided by a sponsor, like a Kroger in particular, and then we get to pick and choose from their kind of menu of things, you know, what would work for them. And then we'll try to supplement it. Maybe we'll buy some food for, we have a location on course, we do a food zone, and then we get some bananas and things that maybe won't be in the bag. But you're kind of at the whim of a sponsor and what they're able to provide. So by budgeting additional money, we'll still get donated items, but then we can expand that to have even more food options for people. So we'll still get complaints.
You always will.
But we just always know we want to do the best we can to make people feel that there's as much value as we can.
But did the people who were last still have food?
Yes.
That's what counts.
And what drove me crazy is 2 years ago, we were getting complaints that, oh, we didn't get food. We, 2 years ago, every year at around 3:30, the Mid-Ohio Food Bank comes by and picks up extra food. We donate everything that's extra. That's at 3:30. Everybody's done. So every time someone says to us, and I get survey results, and even this year there were surveys, oh, I never saw any food. Well,
were you?
Yeah, you go. You walked right through the center of these giant boxes of food that are and bags are being handed out to you, and all these volunteers. So that's not my fault. I don't want you to be upset, but please don't hold it against someone when we've done the best we could because we were there. So
maybe they were just so oblivious they didn't realize the bag had the food.
Yeah, it happens. I don't want a bag. All I want is food. Well, that is the food, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I had a friend who 1 year did the marathon and said that she never saw Port-a-John. She said there were none on the course. I'm like, what do you mean there were none on the course?
Again, I know. You know what?
They get focused.
I do these things. I lose focus. I know. You just become zoned out or oblivious, but that doesn't mean it wasn't there, you know? If a portable bathroom is not in the woods, falls in the woods, does anybody hear it, you know?
Well, and when I was associated with the marathon 10, 15 years ago, and they were hauling off food before people were finished.
Yeah.
And I know that doesn't happen now, but I have done plenty of races where I've gotten to the finish line and there really was nothing. Yeah. And so that, to me, that's my only concern is as long as the people who are at the very end have the same amount of food as the people who finish first, that's really important.
Yeah.
And races like Detroit do that very well.
Good.
It's only a bagel and a banana and a bottle of water, but everybody gets the exact same thing.
Yeah. It's always, I'm always going to be looking out for everybody. And we're committing to work harder to make sure that we celebrate those final folks coming in. We're going to do even better. We always know where they are, but we're actually going to do a better job of maybe starting like 50 back and the last 50 do something really fun stuff.
Oh, that would be fun.
Just because everybody's worked just as hard, you know?
And when you're out there a long time, it is really mentally difficult.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you've pretty much answered all of my questions.
Well, I appreciate you so much by wanting to gather information. I mean that. I appreciate you. Not only your questions good, but they're things that are important to me and to the team. I always would be open and honest about what we're trying to do because this is not my event. This is not their event. None of us. It's the community's event. And there's going to be a day where we're all going to move on and do something else in our lives or wherever we end up. And someone has to continue to make this thing great. And if they're not paying attention to the details now, what's going to happen then? And at the same time, I just don't want to screw it up on my watch.
Isn't that how everybody feels?
Yep. At least they should, you know?
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk
absolutely.
To me today.
I appreciate it.
Walk with me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk.
Isn't the story of the medals arriving amazing? I'm not sure many of the race directors have ever cut it that close before. After the race, after Darris had posted the explanation on Facebook, many Facebook posters were upset the medals aren't made in the United States, and now we know why. I'd like to thank Darris for again taking the time to talk with me on the Walk podcast. He's very easy to talk to and a great interview. You can find Walk Magazine on our website at www.walk-magazine.com. We're on Twitter at walk-magazine, and walk is all caps. On Facebook, it's the Walk newsletter. Don't ask why. If you'd like to email me, send an email to Cindy with an I at walk-magazine.com. The Walk Magazine theme song was written by Gordon Lehman and recorded at Real Time Audio in Denton, Texas. The recording engineer is Eric Delagarde, and it was produced by Eric Delagarde and Gordon Lehman. Vocals by Whitney Wilson, cello by Madeline Hansen, guitar and Fender Rhodes by Gordon Lehman. Thanks, Gordon. And as I always like to say, why run slow when you can walk really fast?
Would you walk with me tomorrow? And if you walk with me today, I'll never cause you any pain. I'll never cause you any sorrow. Would you walk with me forever? Would you walk with me tonight? And if you walk with me forever, I promise that I'll never be far from your sight. Da 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 da
Would you walk across the mountains? And if you walk across the land, I'll take you by the hand and lead you to the fountain. Would you walk into my heart? Would you walk into my being? And if you walk into my heart, this will just be the start of the new world you'll be seeing. Walk with me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity. I'll never cause you any pain, I'll never cause you any sorrow.